Anyway, okay.
All right, movie time.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then podcast time first. Because, yeah, anyway, I know how this works.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie. And we're here to talk about singing and dancing and Bollywood boys.
Bollywood boys who just need to kind of figure out how to love each other and communicate with one another. And what a journey it is for us all to take with them.
Mm-hmm. So sweet.
Yeah.
We watched Meta Boys.
Yeah.
And I am so happy that that was the direction we went in after last week. It felt so nice, like sinking into a warm bath.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was the exact right amount of emotional complexity to make it interesting and compelling, but there was no, like, I didn't think there would be, but sometimes with these family dramas, like, there can be really heavy stuff that you're not ready for or expecting, and it wasn't heavy in that way. It was just, it was just real and authentic. And I also just felt like it was creative and artsy without being, like, contrived, you know? It wasn't, like, trying too hard.
It was was just, like, quiet.
Yeah.
It was quietly doing what it set out to do, which it is was. Show, like, a snapshot of real life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just nice.
It was, like, yeah. I agree. And it was fun to just, like, you know, I skimmed the reviews on IMDb and on Amazon, and so many people were just saying how relatable they found it, which I think is probably one of the main goals that they had in making this movie, was to make it feel like a real father and son experience and relationship.
Right.
And they clearly did a good job. I'm neither a father nor a son, so I can't speak to that, but...
That's true. I mean, because there is probably a gender dynamic that does come into play, but, like, halfway through, it really hit me that I was like, wow, I do feel like it's relatable just for anyone who has a parent and for anyone who has a child, probably, who is grown, because it's like you see it from both sides where the parent is like, well, I'm always going to be your parent. I'm never necessarily going to always trust that you're actually an adult and can make your own decisions. And then on the other hand, the child is like, well, now I'm grown and now I'm trying to take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take care of yourself. But trying to figure out those roles, and it's all coming from, like, a good place, but it's so frustrating to the other person. Yeah.
Yeah. And the realization, too, that, like, your parent is a person and they're therefore flawed and they're a product of the things that have happened to them, just in the same way you're a product of some of the things that they may have done to you.
I also, I just like that, like, at the end of it, no one really changed, not particularly. Like, I feel like they just moved several steps closer to each other.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's real too. Because sometimes in movies, they're like, okay, I'm going to do a 180 and be this completely new person. And it's more like they just accepted the other person for who they are.
Yeah. I agree. It's not, this movie isn't about these two men, like, one or the other or both of them changing as people. It's about them just understanding each other better.
Yeah.
And there were moments as we were moving through the plot where I was like, okay, is it going to be that, like, the son moves in with the dad or the dad moves? And I was like, neither of those feels like authentically what these characters would do. So the fact that it was like all the decisions are still going to play out the way we were told they would from the start of the movie, but just everyone kind of understands each other better is,
it's great.
Before we dive into the cast, the one thing I did want to say is that my one complaint about this movie was that I really wish that the two women in the movie who are, like, big characters, that we got to understand them just a little bit better, independent of the men. In particular, the sister, Anu, who gave an incredible performance. And there was one moment that we'll talk about where we really do get to see her feeling what she's feeling in a very real way. And it was just so good that I was like, I wish just maybe, like, two more moments where that had happened. Because I know it's not about them, but...
Yeah, I was just saying it's interesting because, like, we've watched movies before where it's like the female characters aren't developed. That is not happening here. It's just literally we have a snapshot. Like, we have these two men in the frame. Mm-hmm. And the women come and go, but we're not following them. So it's like, I believe they're fully developed, but we just don't get a ton of them in that snapshot.
I do think that Anu, because we get to see more of her emotion, is a little better developed than Zara.
Yeah.
And I could have done with a little more. Well, anyway, I won't go into the details of that. Their whole relationship was confusing to me, and I never really understood what they were doing.
It was confusing to me as well, because I thought he just wanted to date her, but then it was like, oh, are you dating?
Yeah.
Was that a joke? I don't know.
I know. I was a little confused and thrown by some of those conversations. So yeah, I think for me, it's like there are so many movies that are about men and that the women are always in service of the men, male characters and whatever they're going through, that this was such a deep and impactful movie that I think my expectation was just a little bit higher that they would have done more with the women.
Yeah.
But overall, absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
So, as we mentioned last week, this was directed by Bohmann Irani, who did a phenomenal job.
His debut at 65.
Oh, good for Bohmann. What a delight. Yeah.
just a little quick note. I had been like, oh, did he have words of wisdom or anything? And I didn't find anything that I felt like sharing specifically on the podcast, but he did definitely have some like, it's never too late. Yeah. To, like, do what you want to do. And he was like, waiting until I was 65 worked for me, but do what you feel. And I was like, you're great.
That's nice. I feel like a lot of actors want to make that transition to being behind the camera. Mm-hmm. And he clearly waited until he had the chance to do it in a really meaningful way. It's the right story. It's the right script.
And he co-wrote it.
Well, amazing. Okay. So he just fully got to,
Yeah, which is incredible. Like, I just,
Good work, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Bohmann Irani also stars in the movie as Shiv. I just call him Dad throughout because that was what I had been writing in my notes. And then we have Avinash Tiwari as Ame and Shreya Chaudhary as Zara and Pooja Sarup as Anu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, shall we get into the movie?
Yes.
We open on a man going through his morning routine in his fairly unkempt apartment. Mm-hmm. And this is Ame. And in particular, we see him working on some sketches while he is sitting on his unmade bed.
Yeah.
We follow Ame to work where a woman named Zara pulls him into an empty conference room and asks to see his sketches. But he says he doesn't have anything to show her, and Zara gives him kind of a pep talk, saying, you know, you're enough, you're good enough. The other men who work here, like, they're just as scared as you, but they hide it better, so, like, get out there. And then at the end of this exchange, as we were saying before, Ame asks if they should date, and Zara's like, no, but kind of, like, with a kind of tongue-in-cheek element to it. They are dating, so...
Right. And, like, to be fair, I've made that comment in my relationship jokingly, but, like, we both already knew we were dating, whereas the audience doesn't. We don't know. We don't know the vibe.
Yeah, yeah. It was a little bit confusing.
And then because she spent the night at his house. I was like, oh.
Right. And met and was willing to meet his dad. Like,
and it was fine.
So, like, clearly they, like, do have an established relationship. But you're right. That joke can happen. But it's a little bit, I think, maybe a little clearer to the audience if it doesn't start off that way.
Yeah.
Anyway. So Ame goes to this meeting where, so he's an architect and the architects at his firm are pitching designs that they're then going to submit as a proposal to this company who wants to hire them to build this building for them. And just as Ame is like about to work up the courage to say that he has something to present, the receptionist comes in and hands him a note. And we come to learn that this note says that his mother has died.
Yeah.
So we see Ame leave Mumbai, where he lives and works, and he heads back to the village where he grew up. He does arrive during Holi, which isn't important to the plot, but that Holi just happened, so I felt like maybe I should mention it.
Yeah.
He gets back to his house, and we meet his sister, Anu, who he first sees through the window and says that he thought for a minute that she was mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the two of them hug and cry, and Ame asks if Mom's death was peaceful, and Anu says that she laid her head in Dad's lap and slipped away just like she always wanted.
Hmm.
Which, I mean, just, is there any better way to go? Just
no.
Quietly with the one you love.
Yeah.
The most in the world. But so then Ame asks where he is, but Anu tells him to sit down and have a cup of tea first.
Mm-hmm.
We then see Ame and Anu's dad emerge from where he has been sitting by himself in his bedroom. And by now, other mourners have arrived to pay their condolences to the family. And Dad greets them all very woodenly, very generically. And when he gets to Ame, he gives him the exact same greeting that he's been giving all the other guests.
Yeah.
And so we know that there's some tension here.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, Anu and Ame are discussing something that Anu has to ask their dad, but that they're both confident he will refuse. Anu asks Ame to help her with this, but Ame says that Dad will always disagree with anything he says. He tells Anu to be like their mom, so she confidently struts out onto the cricket field where Dad is playing with a bunch of children. I think he's actually being the umpire, because later he talks about being an umpire, but
yeah.
She tells him that they have to talk, but Dad says it's not the time, and he also says he knows that she wants to force him to move with her to America, where she and her family currently live, and he says that they'll talk about it at dinner.
Mm-hmm.
But at dinner, Dad tells Anu that he and Mom agreed that whenever the first of them died, the second one surviving of the couple would move to Florida with Anu. And
yeah.
He says that he just never thought he would be the one to outlive right? his wife.
That's also so real, because it's like
yeah.
You make those promises or decisions and you're like, well, it's easy to do when that feels so far off, or like that'll never happen. And
yeah, or like I'm thinking of what will be best for you in that situation, yeah. But not necessarily what I would want.
Right.
Yeah. So Anu tries to comfort Dad by saying, you know, your grandchildren will be there. We have a beautiful house. But Dad says, you don't need to convince me. I promised Mom I'm coming.
Mm-hmm.
Ame, meanwhile, is not at dinner. He is on the phone with work in his room, and Anu yells at him. He says he's busy. Dad eventually goes into the room, takes Ame's phone out of his hand, and hangs it up.
Yeah.
Very casually. It's not yep. like he's not making a big deal out of it. He's just like, yeah. It's dinner time. Here we go.
Uh-huh.
Which is, like, even worse in a way than if he had been angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ame ends up leaving, or deciding he's going to leave the next day, and Anu tells him that he has to say goodbye to Dad first because this might be the last time that he and Ame ever see each other again.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ame and Dad have a cold farewell where they just shake hands, but yeah. As Ame turns to leave, Dad asks him if they have cricket in America, and oh. Ame says, I think they have baseball, and Dad looks suitably disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor Dad.
I just like that, yeah, it's like, sorry, the span of, yeah. like, 48 hours is also, like, not just showcasing this father and son trying to figure out how to interact with one another, but also detailing this man's, like, grief for losing yeah. his partner and also, like, leaving his home. And
yeah.
It does so much.
Yep.
In such it really, a small time.
Yeah, and it does seem like it's really only a few days between, like, the mom's death and
mm-hmm.
and everything kind of happening. Clearly some time passes, but not a lot to really
right.
get used to your whole life being changed in this way. But so we see Dad packing up to go to America, and he lovingly bundles the red sari that his wife wore for their wedding. And he zips it first into his suitcase, but then he thinks better of it, and he puts it in his, like, carry-on satchel instead.
Mm-hmm.
So the taxi arrives to bring Dad and Anu to the airport, but Dad is busy typing his will on his typewriter.
Yeah.
Anu says that he can do that when they get to America, but Dad questions, you know, are we bringing the typewriter? And then he starts going around the house and pointing out these objects
mm-hmm.
that have, you know, important memory to him and asking if they'll bring them, including the couch where Mom died.
Yeah.
And he's getting more and more upset, and Anu then just says, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And this was where I wrote down that I wanted more from her, because in addition to managing her own emotions around her mother dying, yeah. she's having to manage the men in her life and their right. emotional reactions. And yeah. so I was really glad that we do get to see her explode in just a couple scenes.
Yes, because it's just like she can't force them to be adults about this. Like right. they need to do something about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we see Ame get a call from Anu that he needs to come to the airport. And when he gets there, we learn that Dad has been bumped from the flight, but Anu is still on it. So Dad is now not scheduled to leave India for another 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Anu thinks Dad should stay with Ame, but yep. both Dad and Ame kind of suggest, well, we could just find a nice hotel for him instead.
Oh, my God.
So Anu just goes off on them, and she's like, if I didn't have to go home to my kids, I would stay here and make your lives miserable for the next 2 days. Then finally she says, I don't care what you do. If you want to keep acting like babies, go for it. But just remember that Mom is watching. And then she storms mm-hmm. off. But Ame does catch her before she goes into the airport, and he promises to bring Dad home with him. And she hugs him and Dad and tells them both to behave themselves.
It's just, the family dynamics are so real.
They're very good. They do, like you said, they manage to fit yeah. a lot of very precise emotions into, mm-hmm. like, they do a lot with every moment that they have to tell this story.
Yeah. And I yeah. just love that it's like, you know, yeah, you have, like, this little blow up, and then there's a very heartfelt goodbye, yeah. and yeah.
And a good chunk of this scene is a single shot.
Mm.
I didn't have time to, like, go back and watch how much of it, but at least the second half is a single shot, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So Ame drives back to his apartment with Dad, who keeps his hand on the handbrake the whole time, which yeah. is just extremely dad behavior. Like,
my dad would never, but it is something that, like, it would bother me. I would go from, like, 0 to 300.
Yes.
In terms of annoyance, very, yep. very quickly.
Yep, same.
It's so just I saw that, I was like, oh, that's such a good detail.
It's that exact kind of button pressing that not just parents, but I feel like any family member is capable of doing in a way that anyone else in your life really isn't. It's just like that lack of belief in you as a right. capable person that hits so hard.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the same reason I overreact when, like, my mother, like, when I'm home visiting her and I go out to get dinner with a friend or something, and, mm-hmm. and she's like, well, remember to say thank you to them
oh
for
my
this.
God.
And it's, like, it's an innocuous comment, but in my mind, I'm like, this is an insult.
Right. Yeah.
So it was just, it's very similar to that. And I think it's probably something that all or a lot of parents / adults maybe do to the younger yeah. adults in their lives
yeah.
in various ways without, again, the intent is not
yeah,
they, mean.
They're not necessarily trying to imply that we're immature or incapable
no.
of moving through the world in a responsible way, but that is the way it comes across, and it is
yeah.
offensive because we've done a lot to prove that we can, and anyway,
right.
yeah.
Right, yeah.
Cuts mm-hmm. right to the quick, that one.
It really does. It was just, I was like, you know what you're doing here.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yep. But so then they get to Ame's apartment, and Dad keeps insisting that he can carry his own bag, so it's the same kind of thing. It's the same kind of dynamic. Even when they have to climb a flight of stairs when the elevator cannot go all the way to the top floor, which is just mm-hmm. rude. Like, if you're going to have an elevator, make it go all the way to the top.
Yeah.
Anyway, as they enter the apartment, Dad questions Ame for leaving the lights on while he's
uh-huh.
out, and goes around and turns off the lights as Ame has turned them on.
Yep.
And just the look, on Ame's face as this is happening is just, he grows more and more quietly furious.
Yeah.
It's very well done.
Yep.
They also argue over who should sleep on the couch. Ame says he has to work the next day, even though it's Sunday, and Dad says that he'll get a better sleep if he sleeps in his bed, but Ame puts his foot down and insists on Dad sleeping in the bedroom and him sleeping on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, it is pouring down rain, and Dad says that there is very bad flooding, so Ame's not going to be able to go to work after all. They're trapped. Ame settles in to work on his bed, but then the ceiling starts leaking, and so he moves out onto the couch with Dad. And Dad puts on the TV while Ame is working, and at first he looks annoyed, but then he gets sucked into the old movie that they're watching together, and they laugh, and they enjoy each other's company.
I love this scene because it's like you have these two people who are determined to kind of be in their own silos.
Yes.
And like, oh, you're so frustrating in these ways. And then kind of despite themselves, they're like, oh yeah, no, this is funny. Oh, haha, we're having a good time. Yeah. Like, Dad was cooking noodles and Ame is like, no, I don't want any. But then you see him eating them.
He's eating noodles, yeah.
It kind of just happens.
Yeah. That comfort comes back, especially when it is someone who you've known your whole life. And I like, too, we see time passing by cutting back repeatedly to the bucket on the bed that's just collecting more and more water from the flooding from the ceiling. Ame falls asleep on the couch, and when he wakes up, he can't find Dad anywhere. He worries briefly that Dad has jumped from the balcony, but he actually just went to get groceries.
Yep.
As they head back up to the apartment, the power goes out, and they have to clamber out of the elevator while it's stuck between floors.
I get Dad's concern there.
That he's gonna get chopped in half? Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
But luckily, no one gets chopped in half. Not that kind of movie. Dad makes them dinner, and Ame lights candles and sets up a table for them on the balcony and pours them each a drink. As they eat, Dad says how Mumbai has changed, and now it looks like just like any other city in the world, all glass and steel. And he says India doesn't look like India anymore. Ame, an architect, immediately takes this as a personal insult. Dad asks Ame how his work is going, and Ame says that his laptop died, so he can't finish it until the power comes back on. And they have an increasingly heated exchange where Dad says that architects shouldn't need computers to do their work, and Ame says Dad is trivializing his work like always, and that new technology makes old ways of doing things obsolete. He uses the typing school that Dad used to run as an example, and Dad immediately takes offense to this.
Yep.
So they're just, again, it's the lack of communication. So the fight escalates until Dad says very intensely that he was a damn good typing teacher, and then the lights come back on. Before the exchange can go any further, they smell burning, and Dad has to go and stop the food from burning. So then Anu calls Ame to tell him that she landed safely and to ask if Dad had a nice birthday. Ame, of course, forgot that it was his dad's birthday, but he says they watched an old movie together and had a candlelit dinner. And Anu thanks him for making an effort on his dad's first birthday without their mom. So that's not great.
No.
For Ame to have forgotten that.
Mm-mm.
Now, it is not Anu's fault, and I truly strongly believe that, but if I were her, I probably would have reminded him.
My sister and I do that for all of our family's birthdays.
Yeah.
It's not even a, we're not assuming the other one forgot. It's just a, hey, by the way, this is happening. And it's like, yep, thanks. Because you don't want to be.
You don't want to forget. Some people take very great offense to that. But then, by the same token, if it were my mom texting me to remind me of something like that, I would get really annoyed.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny how that works, huh?
Yeah. Oh, boy. So the next morning, Dad has made Ame's bed and then scolds Ame for sitting on it and messing it up. Ame asks Dad if he wants to go out to dinner that night before his flight, and Dad says that he wants to meet Ame's fiancé. Ame says he doesn't have a fiancé, and Dad asks why Mom would lie about that, and Ame says that it was probably just wishful thinking on her part. He insists that Zara is just a friend, then corrects that to girlfriend, and says he'll ask if she wants to come to dinner. So I guess they're boyfriend-girlfriend. Cool.
Yeah. She brings a whole wheelie suitcase.
She brings a huge suitcase to stay overnight.
For, like, one night?
Yeah. And I feel like it would have made a lot more sense if she had brought, like, a small bag that she thought that maybe she could get away with as, like, a big purse. But Dad's like, I know that's an over... You know, like, that makes
no,
more
sense.
No, she
brought a full-on wheelie suitcase. And I bring a backpack.
Yeah. Was the other person who wrote this movie with Bowman Irani also a man?
Apparently, because it's like, even if you're like, I need nice clothes for work and makeup, like,
yeah.
You're not bringing a wheelie bag.
The majority of women who have the intention to spend nights with partners and then go to work the next day have a very tidy system for how to make that happen.
Yeah.
And it does not involve a wheelie suitcase. If she were moving in, sure.
Especially when your boyfriend lives, like, you have to go up a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
No.
No way.
No.
Anyway.
That was an oversight.
Yeah.
We're not there yet, but it did bother me. I was like, where's this woman going? Is she going to the airport?
I know. It bothered me too.
Yeah. I was like, what's happening?
But anyway, so Dad tells Ame to pick a nice restaurant and says it's his party, so he'll pay. At work, Ame tells his boss about his mother's death and mentions that his relationship with his dad gets tricky, and this ends up being something that he and his boss kind of bond over. His boss seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
And then his boss tries to get Ame to critique the design that another of the more experienced architects submitted for this proposal. And Ame says it's good. And the boss calls the design tired and overdone and tells Ame that he needs to be more confident. And he says he hired him for his brains and not his experience. He tells Ame that he has something to offer and he needs to offer it. But boss says he's not going to mollycoddle him anymore.
Yeah. I was also just thinking about something about Ame. And his apartment, as you mentioned, is a little messy, disheveled. His clothing has its own special armoire that has lighting. His like, things are laid out perfectly. And so it very much paints the picture of this man who is trying to present like a certain image.
Yeah.
And maybe trying to be this like confident, put together person in spite of who he actually is. Which is something I hadn't necessarily fully put together.
Yeah. I didn't really talk about the clothes in the recap, but you're absolutely right. And there's a very, you know, there's a moment towards the end where he very intentionally decides not to put on a suit and just to wear kind of the more casual look he's wearing.
Yeah.
And it's this moment where, yeah, it's like, I want my outward look to match the way I feel inwardly.
Right.
And I also think it's interesting that it's in the direction of, like, maybe being a little more sloppy. Like, that's okay. Right. You don't need to always be, like, super put together to be professional and to be able to, like, show what you're capable of.
And in fact, you're probably going to be more confident when you're more comfortably representing, like, who you are inside than when you're trying to pretend to be something you're not.
I agree. Yeah. Let that be advice to any of you young people out there listening.
You know,
there's a lot of different ways to show up professionally in your work environment. I'm a supervisor, so I know. Anyway, so that night at dinner, things are going well at first. Dad is kind of teasing Ame by calling Zara his daughter-in-law, even though Ame had asked him not to mention marriage. And Zara is very much going along with it. So it's like, not only are they dating, but she's okay with these kind of jokes. Like, they're pretty serious
relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. Ame excuses himself and catches the waiter to ask him to secretly only charge his dad for half the dinner and then charge his credit card for the other half, and he says that his dad doesn't know how expensive Mumbai is.
Yeah.
So we cut to the end of their meal, and the waiter is taking a picture for them, and then a woman at a neighboring table gets up and offers to take the picture for them. Which was a weird thing to do, but it...
The waiter was doing the thing. Although, she did stage it better.
She did.
Than the waiter did.
Clearly, she was like, I could do a better job at this. Yeah. Which I, you know, I respect. But so, Dad is completely thrown by this. And, at least to me as a viewer, was not clear why, initially. This woman is, like, a little lightly flirtatious with him. And so, at first, I was like, that's probably why that's happening. And when the woman leaves, Zara asks when Dad knew that Mom was the one for him.
Yeah.
And Dad tells this super sweet story about going shopping for a wedding sari with her and spotting a plain, simple one that he saw and thought immediately was made for her. And in that moment, he realized that she was made for him and she can't imagine his life without her.
Yeah.
Which is so sweet. But then the check comes, and Dad realizes right away that it is only half of what they owe.
Mm-hmm.
And when the waiter leaves, he turns to Ame, and he says all he wanted was a nice meal on him, and then he apologizes to Zara and gets up and leaves.
Yeah.
They drive to the airport with Dad's hand on the handbrake the whole way, but then Dad realizes that he doesn't have his bag, his carry-on bag.
Mm-hmm.
So they go back to the restaurant. Ame is feeling very riled up from everything that's been going on.
He just wants his father gone.
He just wants him gone. He loses it at the restaurant, yelling at the wait staff, and gets particularly worked up when they first say that the bag is missing, but then they say that it was probably stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And Ame explains that it had his mother's wedding sari in it, as well as all of his dad's travel documents, and the waiters ruined his father's last memory before leaving India forever.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit of projecting going on there.
Can we also just give the spoiler that the person who stole it was a waiter?
Yeah. Well, it was, like, the guy who was, like...
Which is just, like, that's a really stupid idea.
Yeah.
To steal from the customers, because, like, the first thing your manager's gonna be like is, like, hey, man, was it you?
You got the bag?
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope that managers wouldn't be automatically suspicious of their staff of, like, robbing their clients, but then at the same time, like, it wasn't a small, like, it wasn't a small purse. It was a fairly large satchel.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Where'd he put it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's just, like, a weird choice. Like, you're gonna get fired now.
Yeah. It could have been, like, another customer who, like, brought it back and was like, I'm sorry. Or was like, I thought it was mine. I don't know.
Yeah. It was just,
But so the wait staff, they get Ame to calm down. They tell him that they'll call the police. The police will look into the missing bag. Ame and Dad head back to Ame's apartment with Zara, who Ame coyly tells Dad is staying the night, and Dad says that she's very welcome. He's cool with this. But when they get home, the ceiling has collapsed in Ame's bedroom all over the nicely, freshly made bed.
Yep.
And so we see Zara asleep on the couch, and Dad and Ame clear off the rubble and sleep on the bed underneath the hole looking up at the stars.
Yeah.
Kind of nice. Could be worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so then the next morning, Dad and Ame are covering the hole with a tarp, and Dad has called Anu to get all of the passport details that they need to get him a new replacement passport. But as he's handing the paper to Ame, the wind blows it from his hand, and the red tarp covering the hole billows up into the air.
Mm-hmm.
And this was also where I realized there were, like, pops of red in other moments, too. And I was like, oh, I wish I... Like, I want to rewatch this movie to just pay attention to the color choices. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, the symbolism that that holds for Dad.
Yeah. It's like, that in that moment, it's just, like, so... It's like, Mom is here.
Uh-huh.
Mom is watching, just like Anu said.
Mm-hmm.
And so the builders come to fix the ceiling, and Ame is at work, and he's working late on the design that he wants to present to his boss for the proposal, and he leaves it on his boss's desk with a note saying, here's one thought, but then he seems to change his mind when he notices how much the more experienced architect's design submission looks just like the buildings that he sees outside his boss's window.
Yeah.
Dad and Zara, meanwhile, are having dinner together, and we learn in this conversation that Ame never told his parents he was moving to Mumbai. He seemingly just up and left.
Yeah.
So the next day, Dad and Ame are at the passport office, and Dad gets upset that his new passport is not going to have his old home address on it for the home that he has lived in for literally his entire life. Ame keeps trying to interject in this conversation, which is only infuriating Dad further. They leave the office, and as they're driving home, Ame yells at Dad for the whole holding onto the handbrake thing. They start to have a physical back and forth over it, and they end up accidentally pulling the handbrake, spiraling out of control, and crashing the car.
Mm-hmm.
Ame has a loud reaction to this and kind of throws his hands up in frustration, and Dad takes this as, you know, an invitation for a physical altercation. So he gets out of the car, he pulls Ame out of his seat and says, you know, let's fight, let's settle this once and for all. And they're arguing about the handbrake thing and, you know, all of the larger things that it represents. And Ame eventually starts, like, thumping his chest, literally, and saying, "It's my car. I've been driving it for 10 years without your help, and I'm still alive." And Dad says, "You call this a car, you call that an apartment, and you call, you know, essentially, like, you call this anything." And then he says,
"Yeah,
he can't believe that Ame came here and broke his mom's heart for this."
Yeah, because it's not the life he would want.
Right.
Has the moment with the, like, yeah, the moment with the fixing the roof has already happened where...
Yeah, yeah.
Ame was, like, standing near the hole, and his dad was like, "You're gonna fall." And he was like, "No, I'm not. This is mm-hmm. what this is called." It's just, like, it was so clear then when the actual, when, like, when the roof guys came to work on it, Dad was like, "Well, but tell me." And they're like, "Well, your son would have told you, right? He's an architect." He's like, "Yeah, well, you tell me."
Yeah.
That moment, I get it. Because it's not even like, you're not necessarily thinking that your son's stupid or that he doesn't know what he's talking about. You just have a hard time trusting it completely. And you're like, mm-hmm. "Well, I'm just going to get a second opinion on that just to make sure." But then it's so painful to the child to have you second guessing them in that way. I just thought, like, the way that they are showing these things is so well done.
It is, yeah. And there are so many really well-crafted moments that have all this meaning behind them that I, like, I didn't feel like I could fit all of them in. But yeah, that moment with the support beams is a good one to represent, I think, a lot of what we've been seeing throughout, that Dad really doubts Ame in his decisions and in his kind of just choices about how he lives his life, and that in a way translates to maybe a doubt in his ability to do what he's doing well, or really that there's much value to what he's doing. And Ame is very perceptive of that. So they have this fight, and Dad drops this line about Ame's life not being good enough to have left his family for, and he walks away. Ame calls after him, but Dad flags down a ride and drives off. And so we next see Dad at a busy market ordering food, and then he notices a woman with red flowers in her hair. And he follows after her, calling out Mom's name.
Yeah.
The woman does eventually turn and smile at him, and then continues walking away from him, and he follows her right into traffic and gets hit by a passing motorcycle. Ame goes to the hospital, and Zara is already there, and she says Dad is fine, he just needed some stitches. And Ame explains what happens, and Zara scolds Ame for not taking care of Dad. And then Ame gets upset, saying, "I get in trouble for not taking care of him, but I get in trouble for taking care of him. Like, I can't treat him like an adult, I can't treat him like a kid, what am I supposed to do?" And Zara says, "You treat him like he's your dad."
Yeah.
And that, you know, it gets right to the heart of what you were saying at the start, that, like, the relationship that you have with your parents doesn't necessarily fall tidily into a category.
No.
It's very complex.
It's dynamic. It shifts over time, and it's never going to be clear cut. One of you always does everything for the other.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's hard for parents to accept that their kids might do caretaking type things for them. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for kids to accept that maybe they might need to. And those dynamics are always really difficult. And you know, when they're even worse is when you're as bad at communicating as these two are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So Zara leaves and she tells Ame not to follow her and to go and be with his dad. So Ame goes back to where Dad is sitting on his hospital bed, still looking very much in shock. And Dad explains that he saw Mom in the market and in the restaurant as the woman taking their picture. And he says that, you know, he keeps seeing red and he's seeing these women with red flowers in his hair, in their hair, which is what their mom used to wear. And he says that he's sure that Mom was the one who took his bag with his passport because she doesn't want him to leave India. But then Ame says that it was the waiter who took the bag, and they have it at the restaurant. Everything's fine. And Dad, like, just, again, a great performance from Bowman and Ronnie here, where he just goes from this, like, you know, this kind of rapid fire, like, confusion. Yeah. And, like, "I think this is what's happening," to, like, "Wait, what?" And just, like, immediately gets, like, dragged back down to earth. So Ame says Mom is gone, and he tries to comfort Dad, but Dad pulls away, saying he wants to go home, his home. Not Ame's. So the next morning, Ame wakes up to find that Dad has already left and he's returned to the home where he grew up. At work, Ame chickens out yet again of presenting anything to his boss.
Yep.
Dad, meanwhile, is back in the village playing cricket with the kids, and he yells at one of the boys to bowl like a man.
Oh, God.
The boy throws the ball, and it hits Dad in the chest, and the boy apologizes, but Dad says he did well, also clearly thinking about Ame.
Yeah. There was a moment when I was like, are you kidding me? Is it gonna, like, stop his heart and he'll die, like,
I also on the cricket pitch
behind
second.
His house, which is, like, perfect for him, but, like, not where I want to end this film.
No! And then, yeah, when he's, like, laying on the couch, I was yeah. like, I don't want him to die on die the same couch on- where exactly. his wife died.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, that's not what happens. Ame is at his apartment drinking by himself and remembering and reciting to himself all of the critical things that his dad said to him and about him, including the thing about how every city looks the same and India doesn't look like India anymore. And it finally clicks. I had mm-hmm. thought it had clicked earlier, but it took Ame a little bit longer.
You know, we're all humans. We're all flawed.
And he's dealing with a lot right now. So. Yes. So he calls Zara and says he needs her help. He presents his boss a series of drawings with a note on them saying, "This is the one," much more confident than his previous sticky note.
Mm-hmm.
But the more experienced architect who had submitted the boring design says that Ame's design looks like a cheap film set, and he accuses Ame of prostituting exotic India to the West.
This guy, like, yells at him for, like, 4 minutes.
A really long time. He's,
like, really... And I'm like, whoa, bro, you're really digging in here, like, because I don't think this is gonna go where you, like, want it to go.
Yeah, like, chill. Did your mom just die? Like, come on.
Yeah.
He also says that the design doesn't fit the client's brief, which requires the use of modern technology. Ame fends for his vision, explaining that traditional Indian architecture was designed for efficiency in India's climate, which means they'll actually lower the cost of the building's upkeep as well as the carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. And so it does meet the brief. And then he asks if anyone can actually see India out the window.
Yeah.
And so Zara confirms that Ame's design will be more expensive up front, but that it will eventually be more energy and cost efficient. And so she says that the client will love the design and doubts that the added expense up front will be a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Back at home, Dad is lying on the couch where Mom died, and he's icing his injury from the baseball. And the doorbell rings, and I assumed it was Ame, but it's the young boy who's there to apologize. But then Ame does indeed roll up in a taxi. So yay! Mm-hmm. He shows his designs to Dad and says that he realizes now that Dad was trying to teach him to fight for himself, and Ame apologizes for not understanding that sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Dad accepts his apology, and while he doesn't actually apologize for anything directly with Ame, he does weep as Ame turns to walk away.
Yeah.
So they go back to Mumbai together, and as they're leaving Ame's apartment for the airport, a woman with red flowers in her hair gets on the elevator with them.
Mm-hmm.
They drive to the airport with Dad holding the handbrake the whole time.
Yep.
And when they arrive, Dad first puts out his hand to shake for Ame, but then instead embraces him and kisses him on the cheek. Ame watches him go with tears in his eyes, and when he arrives back at his apartment, he turns off the lights. And that is the end.
I love how they showed that growth from both of them.
Yeah.
And I, like, loved that when Ame looked down at his dad holding the parking brake, he kind of was just like, oh, Dad, just doing what Dad does, rather than having the annoyance he had earlier in the film.
Yeah. And like you said at the start, it's more this, like, this deeper understanding of each other, and Ame realizing, like, it's not actually meant to be an insult, and if it makes my dad feel better, then why not just let it
exactly. happen? Like, this is who he is. It's not gonna change, so you can continue to, like, butt heads about it, or you can start to kind of just accept it, and
again, it's that realization that your parents are human, and they are flawed, and there are some ways that they're just like any of us, there are some ways that they're never going to really be able to overcome certain things. Yeah. At least not without some therapy.
Yeah.
But I also just love how the old versus new and kind of the architectural design stuff mirrors that trajectory of the story between our main characters. Mm-hmm. And that was just, you know, it was just kind of a cool element and an yeah. interesting way for them to say something and make a certain point about Indian architecture and culture. Like, that obviously wasn't yeah. the point of the movie, but it was just a right. nice little added element to everything.
I was thinking the same thing, too. Like, the symmetry present throughout the storyline
yeah.
is just really satisfying.
Yes.
And again, and I think because they kept, like, the focus narrow, mm-hmm. but then they were including everything that fell within that focus, like, they were able to do a lot while doing a little. Like,
yeah.
it was so well done.
It was really well done. And it just, you know, you just saying that makes me think about all of the times that we critique movies for trying to do too much.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show that a movie can still fit really nicely mm-hmm. within, like, the Bollywood Hindi film genre, can still really draw on a lot of the, like, key dynamics of that world.
Yeah.
And still maintain a narrower scope and still hit really hard in one place.
Right.
And be really, really successful at hitting in that one place.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent work.
I loved it. It was, and again, it was so nice to go from the glitzy action, like pow, 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 yeah. to this.
Big dance numbers. And, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, I loved it. It was great. Happy we watched it.
Yeah. So, yeah, tell me about your research.
Well, in honor of Ame being an architect.
Yeah?
And his dad mentioned the Taj Mahal.
Oh!
I was like, what if we talk about the Taj Mahal?
Sure, why not?
We all know about it, but, like, do we really know about it?
Yeah, and by we, you mean white Americans.
And by we, I specifically mean me and you.
Yeah.
By we, I mean me.
And me. I don't know much about it.
Right? Because I was like, I don't think we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
So yeah, relatively short research segment because I'm not an architect and I don't want to get into all the specific architectural yeah. features. That doesn't sound interesting to me, if I'm being honest. Love to see it. Don't need to hear about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think yeah. that's fair.
So the Taj Mahal is located in Agra.
Mm-hmm.
It was built by the Mughal emperor Shah Jahan to immortalize his empress consort, Mumtaz Mahal, who died in 1631, giving birth to their 14th child.
Wow, that's a lot of children.
Yeah, I said, yikes.
It's a lot of births.
Yep, I think one is too many for me.
I mean, honestly, like, to die after having 13
it's pretty
children,
good.
Pretty good odds for that, yeah. that time.
So true. The Taj Mahal is considered the finest example of Mughal architecture, blending Indian, Persian, and Islamic styles. Mm. In addition to the mausoleum itself, there are twin mosque buildings symmetrically on either side of the mausoleum, gardens, and a museum covering 42 acres. It was designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 1983 for being, quote, the jewel of Islamic art in India and one of the universally admired masterpieces of the world's heritage.
I mean, yeah.
Truly, it is one of the seven wonders of the world.
It is, yeah.
The inspiration for the Taj Mahal came from a verse by the poet Bibadal Khan. The construction was meant to be an earthly replica of Mumtaz Mahal's celestial abode in paradise.
Oh,
I yes. see.
It's like, this is where she's chilling in yeah, paradise.
Yeah.
And
which
let
is
us
like,
all
cool.
Yeah, feel close yeah. to her in that way.
Yeah. And it's believed that the chief architect was Ustad Ahmad Lahari, an Indian of Persian descent. Hmm. The main elements of the complex, this includes the gateway, the garden, the mosque, the jawab, which is a building mirroring the mosque, and mausoleum, were designed as a unified entity according to Mughal building practice, which allowed no additions or alterations.
Ah.
Isn't that, I was like, that's such a Mughal empire yeah. thing to do. Like, to be like,
this
no,
is what this is.
You have to follow our, like, blueprint.
Yeah.
We love art. We love culture. But we also like order.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I feel like we talk a lot about the Mughals And yeah.
It just feels very on brand for them. Yeah.
Yeah. So building started in 1632, a year after Mumtaz's death. And more than 20,000 workers were employed from India, Persia, the Ottoman Empire, and Europe to complete the mausoleum by 1638 or 1639. Unclear wow. which.
Yeah.
The adjunct buildings were finished by 1643, and the decoration work continued until at least 1647.
Wow.
All in all, construction of the complex spanned 22 years, and it is estimated that it cost around 32 million rupees at the time, or the equivalent of 827 million US dollars in 2015.
Wow.
So that's probably like $850 million now. At least.
Yeah.
Inflation. That might be an exaggeration, but I don't know. Anyway, and then I was like, hey, some more specific details about the Taj Mahal. Let's go. Yeah. The main mausoleum is made of white marble that intentionally reflects the light of sunlight or moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. One decorative feature in particular is repeated throughout the complex, pietra dura, which is hard stone in Italian, which incorporates the inlay of semi-precious stones like lapis lazuli, jade, crystal, turquoise, and amethyst in intertwining geometric and floral designs.
Wow.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
I want to see it.
Yeah, I do too.
There are also multiple verses from the Quran inscribed in various places around the complex.
Mm-hmm.
And you know I love like a myth.
Always,
so there's
yeah.
just like a story that I think historians have largely discredited, but whatever, they're fun.
Sure.
So there's a story that Shah Jahan originally intended to build another mausoleum across the river for his own remains.
Mm.
And that structure would have been constructed of black marble.
Oh.
And yeah, and would have been connected by bridge to the Taj Mahal. However, he was deposed in 1658 by his son and was imprisoned for the rest of his life in Agra Fort. When he died in 1666, his son did bury him in the mausoleum next to his wife. So Shah Jahan's tomb is also in the Taj Mahal.
Well, that's nice.
It is nice that they're together in their afterlife.
If I were her, I would rather he be next to me than across the river.
Yeah, you have to cross the bridge? Like, yeah. What? Nah.
It's a long
journey. Feels like it's big enough for two. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so just a note on the Taj Mahal today. A major restoration effort started in 1998 because air pollution and acid rain has damaged the marble facade. Progress to protect the complex from further environmental pollution has been slow. They've tried to like make a buffer basically where no cars are allowed to come near it. Things like that, but change is slow, and in a yeah. really populated country that deals with a lot of air pollution, yeah. So that's an ongoing challenge. And additionally, the Taj Mahal is increasingly seen as an Indian cultural symbol, and some Hindu nationalist groups have attempted to diminish the importance of the Muslim influence on the origin and designs of it. But it is clearly... Islamic. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Right, right. I mean, if you have any familiarity with Muslim art and architecture, it's clear looking at it. And
yeah. So yeah. Screw off, Hindu nationalists.
As we often say.
I don't mind being political about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing those details about the Taj Mahal. It does get me thinking. I did have a thought as you were explaining kind of the meaning behind the design choices and what it's meant to represent, I had this thought in my head of like, oh, well, people don't build things like that anymore. And then I was like, what am I saying? Of course they do. Like,
yeah.
Obviously there's some stuff that just gets built to get built and serve a you know, an efficient function. But like, of course there's a lot of art to architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what Ame is dealing with in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, at the surface, if you're looking at all these buildings that are glass and steel,
mm-hmm.
they all might look the same, but really at their core, like, what was the intention behind all of that? What was
yeah.
the, you know, the purpose and the desire?
You yeah. just look at some of like the weird apartment buildings popping up in New York and you're just like, what is that?
Like, the really big tall ones by Central Park that, like, literally, like, wave in the wind because no one lives there because they're just, like, for money laundering for, like,
like foreign
billionaires. But yeah, that's maybe not a good example. But I still am very appreciative of the wealthy Mughals for the art and architecture that they brought to the world.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I'm always impressed when there's a structure that lasts like hundreds upon hundreds of years, especially in a region where there's been plundering and there's been fighting and all of that stuff. So it's cool.
It is very cool. And especially, again, for us Americans, where so many of our structures are so young.
Yeah.
And a lot of what existed hundreds of thousands of years ago got destroyed by the white people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I hope to someday see the Taj Mahal in person.
Me too.
As one of many destinations I would like to visit in India.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll happen. I have confidence. Just like a May. Yeah. In sunshine. I have confidence in rain. You know.
Yeah, good stuff.
So, Bollywood Star Watch.
I don't have anything in that vein.
Kay.
Did you have anything in that vein?
Well, you know, I'm never on Instagram anymore, but I did go on Instagram to post about the episode that was released a week ago. So, but is Deepika like in Paris or something?
She did post some pictures from Paris. Yeah, she looked beautiful.
Yeah, she's just beautiful. Yeah. So that's my Bollywood Star Watch. Still
loved
hot.
It. Deepika,
I know everyone still, was worried.
Still gorgeous, still worth watching. I wanted to share that I watched a series on Netflix recently called Dhaba Cartel, which was an interesting series. It was good. It wasn't like amazing, but it was it was good. It was entertaining. But what I wanted to specifically share about it was it had the best depiction of a gay romance that I've seen in anything. Because it's not in anything in anything from like the Hindi language world.
Yeah.
Because it was literally just like these two women just like met and realized they were into each other and like started hanging out together in exactly the same kind of way and pattern that you would see a man and a woman do that. It was just like very natural. The show never dwelled on it or made it a thing.
They're just two people in a entering a relationship, just as other people may enter a relationship. Yeah.
And yet they did, there was a thoughtful moment where like one of them was like, you know, do you ever think about leaving India? And the other one's like, yeah, for a country that would accept our us getting married. Absolutely. And so it was still like real and aware that a gay relationship would have different challenges to a straight relationship, but it wasn't about trauma or about them not being accepted. And
that's
I was just
amazing.
Like, love to see it.
Yeah.
Love,
moving in
love
the correct direction. Yeah.
Yeah. For That's reasons really I won't nice. Spoil in case anyone wants to watch the show, that relationship is on the rocks by the end of the series, but nothing to do with their gayness. So that's
great. I love that.
Yeah.
Cool. Pluggables. Follow us at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you do there. I am trying to be better about it. So
you're doing great, Katie.
Might take a few days for me to respond, but hey, we'll do it.
We're here.
We'll get there. Yeah.
And we like you.
We do truly like you. Please don't think that my lack of response over social media implies I don't like and appreciate you.
Yeah.
You should talk to my sister about that because...
You could also talk to my sister about that for me. It's...
Yeah. My sister sends me stuff all the time and gets so upset. And I'm like, yeah, girl, I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, also consider subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You could also leave a rating or review.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever you do or do not do, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah. And if you want to send us any recommendations too, the Instagram's a great place to do that. So
yes,
never hesitate. And join us on YouTube and Spotify, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists. And for the songs that we watch that have musical numbers, we'll add our favorites to those playlists and link them in our episode descriptions, as well as in our posts on Instagram.
Yeah.
Great. As well as in our posts on Instagram.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So next up.
yet again going in a completely different direction from...
Yeah, we like to ping pong. What can we say?
We really do. We're going to be doing another Divide and Conquer, watching two movies that are potentially the exact same movie. I will be watching the Tamil language film Terry.
Yes, and I will be watching the Hindi language remake Baby John.
Yeah. We obviously, like, wanted to watch Baby John. I know I was keeping you up to date on the developments as it was coming out. And then, of course, didn't realize until it was out that it was a remake. But that's classic just fun because... Classic us. But we get to do the thing that I love where we watch two different movies and we come together and we compare and contrast. And that way we get to appreciate both the original and the remake.
Yeah. I'm excited. I feel like we haven't done this in, like, a year.
I know, yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah. I'm also just, like, always so excited for my boy, Varun, you know?
Always. Yeah. And I'm excited for our girl, Samantha.
Yes!
So, on IMDb, the plot description for Terry is, when his daughter's life is endangered by a local gang, Joseph Kuruvilla will do whatever it takes to stop them. However, at the same time, his dangerous past slowly resurfaces.
Ooh. Slowly.
Over the course of probably 2.5 hours.
Is it bad? I was, like, thinking of, like, a dead person, like, rising up from the grave because, like, the rain has washed away the topsoil. I was like, ooh, that's gruesome.
I hope that that's not the vibe we're going for here.
I don't know what's going on. I guess maybe I've lived in the witch city for too long. Things are getting creepy up in here.
Yeah.
Anyway, Baby John, if you want to watch the Hindi language one remake, is available to watch on Amazon Prime. And the synopsis for that is, John's peaceful life with daughter Kushi is disrupted by a sex trafficking gang. Revealing his past as Deputy Commissioner Satya, he seeks revenge for his family's murder. Holy crap. Okay. Saving minor girls and punishing criminals before starting anew. I feel like that had some spoilers.
It maybe did. I think your plot description was about a thing that happens before the action of the movie.
Oh.
And mine is about what leads to the action of the movie, if that makes sense.
Yes.
That's at least my understanding from having watched the trailers for Baby John. I've never watched the trailers for Terry. I imagine it's very similar. And I forgot to mention that it is available to rent on YouTube and Apple TV and a few other places. But so that's where I'll be watching it.
Perfect. I have not watched a trailer, so I'm just seeing, like, Varun holding, I don't know, a glass of whiskey and maybe also a cigarette and also a giant gun.
Sure.
I'm here for it. Let's go.
You know, that's so in is like the hero in his 30s who's like very hardened and grizzled and smokes and drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like,
The more I was talking, the more I was like, I am sort of describing my fiancé, but he beats up fewer people, and now he doesn't drink.
Yeah.
Still grizzled, still smokes, but what are you going to do?
Uh-huh. Oh, that's great. You have a type. And it aligns with
what
Bollywood's type, I guess. So
it really does. Yeah, I'll take it.
You're doing something right. Okay, great. So yeah, I think we're in for some good action.
Yeah.
Bring it on. And until next time, remember, Bollywood doesn't need us.
No.
But we need Bollywood.
We do. And good, healthy communication with our parents.
Yeah. And understanding.
Yeah. Just of, each other as people.
I think,
understanding of all people.
Try to meet people where they're at.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.